And we are joined now by Dr. Karen Gran. She is a professor of geology at UMD, and she's giving a presentation on North Shore rivers tomorrow morning at 10 o'clock at Sugarloaf Cove. Welcome, Dr. Gran.
Thank you for having me on.
Yeah, thanks for being on. Well, first of all, Buck and I were talking about this a little earlier. Before we get into explaining your field of work, I saw on your website that you say you are a fluvial geomorphologist, which I can barely say. And I bet other folks might not know what that means either. So would you explain what that means?
Well, sure. Well, fundamentally, the word geomorphology refers to the study of the surface of the Earth and the processes that shape the surface of the Earth. So this includes things like glaciers, rivers, landslides, wind. The fluvial half refers to rivers. It's really just a fancy way to say rivers. So my research is focused on river processes, sediment transport, and river evolution. And I look at it over timescales that are a little bit longer than most people think about, sort of thousands of years to hundreds of thousands of years, but perhaps shorter timescales than most geologists deal with.
Interesting. Okay, well, thank you. That helps quite a bit. I know you're going to be speaking about North Shore rivers tomorrow and perhaps a little bit in particular on the Cross River, but in general, what is it about North Shore rivers that makes them special?
You know, I love North Shore rivers. Not only are they beautiful, but they really are rather unique. They're quite similar to mountain rivers. I mean, I realize that our mountains are a lot shorter than most mountains, but we have a lot of the same kind of reach characteristics. So a lot of the rivers, if you go to just an individual part of the river on a North Shore stream, it's going to look very similar to a river you might find in the mountains. You have steep waterfalls, you have rugged cascades, you have some beautiful step pool channels in places, and then we also have slow meandering channels and wetland streams. The unique thing about North Shore streams is they're essentially upside down. In a mountain river, you're going to have the steep reaches way up high in the headwaters, and as you go downstream, the rivers get less and less steep, a little bit more calm, the grain size goes down, and things get smaller and smaller, and you eventually have a nice meandering sandy stream at the bottom. But here we have our nice flat rivers up at the top, and as you go closer to the lake downstream, they get steeper and steeper. So they really are essentially inverted rivers, similar to mountain rivers, but upside down.
That's very interesting. And is that due to the nature of the rock and sediment below them?
Yeah, well, the rocks are very difficult to erode. We have a lot of igneous rocks. They're volcanic rocks and intrusive igneous rocks. And so they're very tough. They're very resistant to erosion. But what's probably had a bigger impact was the glacial history of the area that scooped out the basin where Lake Superior is now located. And that essentially dropped the level that the mouth of the river is at. So you could picture, if you can sort of fill in Lake Superior in your mind with sediment or with rock, then the rivers would have flowed, you know, out into this basin, and they would have, over time, turned into kind of a nice graded river, something that's a little bit steeper at the top and lower gradient as you go close to the lake. When you scoop out that deep basin, now the mouth of the river has dropped substantially, and so you get the really steep drop-off close to the lake. And so fundamentally, they're really young rivers, and they're still adjusting to the last glaciation.
That's really interesting. Tell us a little bit about how you can tell or understand geologic history from looking at a river. What do you look for?
I do a lot of work looking at sort of large-scale features in the landscape. So I do a lot of work in GIS, which stands for Geographic Information Systems. It's a way to look at a lot of different kinds of data over a large area. So we look at topographic analyses a lot. We look at where the areas are flat, where they're steeper, where they're steeper than they probably should be. If you look at sort of just how rivers would evolve over time. And so you can find places where you have these discontinuities in the slope. They're steeper than they should be in this particular area. We actually have a name for that. It's called a nick point. And so you might find nick points lining the rivers. There's a lot of work I've done, not just on the North Shore, but down in southern Minnesota, where we can actually see nick points from the draining of a big glacial lake that carved the Minnesota River Valley. And you can actually see the nick points kind of lined up on all the rivers around it. Haven't done that analysis on all the rivers of the North Shore yet, but you do have some really interesting history with these nick points that are migrating upstream. And you have to sort of picture in your mind, what will this river look like in the future? What would it look like in the past? So a lot of my river, a lot of my research comes from analyzing topography remotely. Huh. And then we also do a lot of work in the field trying to look at the interesting interplay between where you find the really steep areas of the river and where you start to hit glacial deposits versus bedrock. And some of that research is geared towards understanding where a lot of the extra fine sediment is coming from in rivers.
Okay. And how is this information, Dr. Gran, used then in practical applications?
Mm-hmm. Well, up here, it's useful to know sort of where the hot spots of erosion might be. A lot of our rivers are beautiful trout streams, and if you start to put too much fine sediment in them, it can kind of smother the bed. It can have bad effects on both the fish as well as macroinvertebrates in the streams. And so understanding where the sources of sediment are coming from is useful. And this is something that we can actually, we're in the process of developing some models that you could apply to topography data coupled with information on where is bedrock and where are these glacial deposits that are erodible, that could sort of pinpoint where you would expect to have natural erosional hotspots, places where a lot of sediment is probably entering the river naturally. These are places that you might want to perhaps protect a little bit better. If the problem gets too bad, those are places you might want to stabilize. And so these are places that you would put a little bit of focus and energy and attention onto. You can also use information like this coupled with other people who are working on the effects of changing climate on precipitation or patterns of urbanization that are changing the water flux into the channel, and understand which areas are particularly sensitive. Hmm. So there is a potential applied side to the work as well.
Mm-hmm. If you just joined us, we're speaking with Dr. Karen Gran. She's a professor of geology at UMD, and she's giving a presentation on North Shore rivers tomorrow morning at Sugarloaf Cove. Dr. Gran, I understand when I was reading up a little bit on you that you've also studied rivers at Mount Pinatubo after it erupted. Will you tell us about that? Because that sounds very interesting, and I'm just curious about how does a volcanic eruption affect the waters in that area?
Yeah, sure. This is work that I started doing when I was a PhD student. For those who are either too young or don't remember, I've discovered many of my students were not alive when Mount Pinatubo erupted. It erupted back in 1991. It was about 10 times bigger than Mount St. Helens in terms of the amount of material that was erupted out of the volcano. And so if you want to think about how much it was about 5 or 6 cubic kilometers of material was erupted out of the volcano.
Wow.
And it was not just, for the most part, it was not lava flows. It was debris. And the debris formed these big pyroclastic flows that washed down the valleys and the rivers and deposited a whole bunch of this volcanic debris in the river valleys themselves. In some places, debris like that is really hot, and it will weld into a rock. But at Pinatubo, it was not quite hot enough to weld. So you ended up with these, some places, 200 feet thick piles of sort of sand and rubble that had been erupted out of the volcano. And that has a pretty big impact on the rivers.
Yeah.
And so what happened at Pinatubo was in the probably the decade after the eruption, there were hundreds of volcanic debris flows. We actually use the term lahars to refer to those debris flows, and that in part, it's an Indonesian term that means volcanic mud flow. And it was used for the local populace to actually instill fear in people so that they would take these flows very seriously. Some people hear the word mud flow and they don't think it means a whole lot, but when they hear lahar, they know they need to evacuate and they need to get out of the way. And the lahars poured down all the rivers that drained the volcano. They buried entire cities in volcanic debris, basically sand and gravel that came out of the volcano. And you can imagine this would have a pretty big impact on the river.
Yeah.
I started working out there in the year 2000, so it had already been almost 10 years since the eruption, and I managed to get some data sets from students who had been out there a few years before me as well. And we were able to track over the next 10 years how those rivers evolved from this huge sediment load that was dumped into them. So from the perspective of the river, yeah, it was a big eruption, but really it was a big pile of sediment that got dumped into the river. And more importantly, it was a really big pile of sand. And so I've been studying how the rivers process all that sand, how they evacuate the sand, how they coarsen up through time, and now it's to the point where vegetation is starting to come back in on some of the rivers as well. And it's been really amazing to watch. I love trying to tease out river evolution by looking at sort of these long-term data sets and trying to tease it out of the topography. But at Pinatubo, we could watch it happen.
Mm-hmm.
And so I always like to think of geomorphology as sort of, you know, it's sped up geology, right? We get to actually see things change. But working at Mount Pinatubo, that was like geomorphology on steroids. I mean, it was really changing quickly.
So that much debris spewed out into rivers. I mean, did some of them just completely stop?
Yes. Yeah, there were some places where the rivers actually would dam up tributaries that were coming in, and they would form large lakes. And then sometimes those lakes would rupture through, and they'd carry a whole big wave of new sediment-laden water downstream and form another lahar. There were places where the rivers got rerouted and went the opposite direction for a while. There was these two rivers that I work on. 3 years after the eruption, I guess it was 2 years, it was 1993, one of the rivers actually captured half of the watershed of the other one. And so it essentially doubled its size overnight. And that river drained down into a city that had about 60,000 people in it, and the entire city was essentially buried. I mean, for the most part, people knew to evacuate. They knew to take this seriously. But, you know, the entire city was buried. Some people dug their houses out and jacked them up, and then they would get buried again. So it was an amazing amount of sediment.
Wow. It must be fascinating to look at. I suppose you have aerial photos or something, or satellite photos of the area before the eruption and after.
Yes.
They must be wildly different.
It is. And something that struck me actually is particularly, kind of poignant, was going to visit this one particular city, the city of Bacalar, and they have an old Spanish cathedral there. And we walked into the cathedral through a door that was at the ground level, and it was actually used to be the window on the choir loft. And so you were walking into a large cathedral, but you were standing in the rafters.
Oh, wow.
And that was how much sediment had filled up that area.
That, you're right. That would be a very unusual experience. Well, back to Minnesota, I guess, here.
Our volcano's a lot older here. Yeah.
Yes. Anything else you'd like to add before we let you go, Dr. Graham?
I don't think so. Thanks so much for having me on.